Reed Street. Yeah. Reed, whatever, by yeah. Beach Street, Reed Street.
I think I know that one. They let you take out.
So I'll eat and then I'll take my seconds. Yeah. I have food. I got like at least three containers now. That's how I'm surviving.
Yeah. Yeah, we were just talking about that off air. Diego is unemployed right now. We got to tell the story about that because this is something we've talked about on the show before. So in Britain, they call this, I don't know why I'm saying Britain, but I just, because we were just talking about it. In Britain, they call this 0-hour contracts. Here in America, we're so weak as a working class, we don't even have a word for it. But here we go. Let's describe your situation. This happens in retail a lot around Christmas time is where I've run into it. You get a job at some store Christmas time. They need extra help.
Mm-hmm.
They hire a bunch of people. Then the Christmas ends. Maybe they keep you on for another week. And they don't bother firing you. They'll say you're fired because you can collect unemployment if that happens. Instead, they just say, we're out of hours. And the workers are like, oh, so we're just out of hours. Okay, whatever. Well, I'll call back when you get more hours. You never get more hours. That's it. You're gone.
Yeah.
It's just a way of firing you without firing you. And most workers don't realize they can go and collect unemployment when that happens. But anyway, go ahead
also,
with your...
Also, I can collect.
Oh, yeah. You can go collect. You got fired. That's firing. Yeah. You know, whether the law allows...
Well, I said on the third week, so in the last week of this month, apparently...
They're
I'll
lying,
be back,
though. They're lying. But anyway, this is an example of what we're talking about. Go ahead. What happened?
Yeah, so I work in this place called Clover. It's a vegetarian chain, and I'm at the hub where we produce everything. And I was sick a couple of days. I don't know, asthma, whatever. But I don't go to the doctors because I don't have insurance. So it's like, you know, just to get a doctor's note, it's like $700. I already told you it happened last year.
Yep.
$725 just for a doctor's note so I don't get fired.
Welcome to America. Yep.
So
no universal health care. Oh. Go ahead. Sorry.
And so that happened. And then now he's telling me there's no more hours because I can't. You're unreliable. You're always calling out or whatever.
Oh, you didn't tell me that part. You didn't tell me that part.
Four times.
That's definitely a firing. They're taking away your hours. Okay, so the example I gave of people lose hours for no discernible reason. The reason you're being given
because I'm calling out
is so that's even more of a firing.
And I can't produce a note because obviously I just took care of myself at home.
Yeah,
it's just like I can't make it.
That, that's being fired. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Clover pretends to be progressive.
Jobs. I had to hire other people because you're unreliable, things like that.
Oh dear.
And then he goes. Yeah, try back the third week. I might have some work for you or some hours.
Clover,
you're not fired.
Clover pretends to be progressive, too. No, that's a firing. That's a firing. What
the
are you supposed to do for 2 weeks without... I hate that whole... The whole vibe of Clover makes me want to vomit, basically.
They walk in like it's an adventure, you know?
No. They have all the latest little gadgets to order on, so
and
they
really
have, so they have less
workers.
I've seen
how they abuse us. There's a lot of Salvadorians working there and Brazilians
that
you know that they just there because they need to, you know? There's a Brazilian guy working the whole day. He's got two jobs. Works every day, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
Has another job at Cinderella's right by Main Street in Cambridge. And I said, where do you sleep? When do you sleep?
Yep.
And they tell him, oh, you need to stay. They don't even ask him, can you stay? You got to stay. He goes. I was like, why did you just go? Why didn't you just say no? Oh, because I don't want to get fired.
Yeah, exactly. Note about restaurants. They live off of exploiting cheap labor in the back room, you know, in the kitchens and so on. Of course, the wait staff usually too. So all the hipsters out there eating their nice meals and stuff.
And I would ask him, do they do this in Brazil? No, they don't. I would say, why are you taking it, you know?
Yep. It's really a rotten, rotten system, capitalism. And in this country, the belly of the beast, it's just the rottenest, in some ways. Cause in terms of the inequality, in terms of all the wealth around and then doing stuff like that every day to people.
And then I got all these applications going. So now the targets, it's... quote unquote questionable because of my background check. I'm not scared. I don't have any bad, background.
Yeah.
Unless political agitator is part of
Who knows these days? Who knows? But hey, I got to give the legal represent. Speaking of legal stuff, we are WMFO Medford, WMFO in Medford. And that is our legal identification. And we are also known as WMFO in Medford, 91.5 FM, Tufts Freeform. Commercial-free, what's the other one I always say? Freeform, commercial-free, community-based radio, also known as Tufts Educational Radio. And why don't we do a quick PSA?
Can you do one about the healthcare system? Is there one about healthcare system?
Well, on the way in, I heard the show before us do one on healthcare. And I don't know if I could find it very quickly.
Is there anything about being penalized for not having $600, Jeff? The feds.
Well,
on my income tax.
The
automatically just.
I know that was one of the problems with.
Did you get hit
with Obamacare? No, I have expensive health care through Harvard University.
Oh, so you're getting hit regularly,
which should be free. Yeah. No, what happens with me is that my net pay is so much lower than my gross pay. I literally lose like $10,000 to $15,000 per year, based on taxation and deductions.
What, on health care?
And most of the deductions. No, all of different stuff, but health care is a big chunk of that. So where is this thing? I heard them talk about it on the way here. Maybe they got it from a different location than I'm looking. I'm looking at the old school, what's written down here thing. And anyway, let's just go with this for now. Numbers to think about. The United States has less than 5% of the planet's population, but incarcerates 24% of its prisoners and accounts for 43% of the world's total military spending. That's going to go up under Trumpo. A public service message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio. While we're at it, why don't we do one other one real quick? Storm season. Tuesday, we're going to get a foot of snow.
Are you serious?
That's another thing about, yeah, it's supposed to be a big northeaster blizzard. Yep. And that's another thing about what you just said, right? Time off from work.
I'm going to call my friend.
They want you to come in when you're sick, right? Here's another thing. I work for the richest corporation, richest university in the world, one of the richest corporations in the world. Depending on statistics you read, the second or third largest employer in Massachusetts. All around big, rich, scummy Harvard University. I work for them, right? So, when it comes to snow days, what happens at Harvard University?
You have to go in.
They almost always make you go in. And it really kicked in about 3 or 4 years ago, I think, when Drew Faust came in, the current presidente of Harvard. I don't know what the correlation is there between her and snow days, but you know, she's a CEO on the corporate board of Harvard. Harvard's just a corporation. People think it's a college. It's a corporation. And they got, all of a sudden, they were always very... very like hesitant to call snow day, but it got even worse, and they actually came up with some language, and I think it's because my unionership unfortunately negotiated language with them about it. And before there really wasn't any, it was just sort of like, yeah, you should have a snow day. And the language is very bad. The language is like, oh, Harvard's like an urban university, and we have a mission to do this or that, and we rarely cancel classes, and therefore blah blah blah. And, you know, all ignoring the fact that most workers at Harvard, myself included, can't afford to live within, you know, anything close to Harvard. No one can afford to live near Harvard. No one can afford to live in Cambridge anymore. Everybody's commuting in. All the workers are commuting in, you know? So if you want to keep things open for the students, and even the grad, when you get to the grad student population, forget about it. This is a real hardship to keep a class going and have them teach it, probably.
That's what I noticed about the universities
during a snow day.
In Cuba, they have everything inside the university. Like, the teachers have their own, you know, the students. Yep, so it's everything's within that locale.
Not here.
It's set up differently.
Harvard,
you know what I mean?
Also, Harvard, everyone thinks of Harvard Yard in Harvard. Harvard's got its tentacles, you know, way out into Austin, of course. Now they're rebuilding Austin into an image of
more gentrification.
Well, yeah, that plus also who knows what kind of scientific machinations they're doing there. Who knows what the next invention will be from labs they're setting up out there. Something evil, no doubt. The business school is out there already.
All those rats will become big mutant rats like Splinter and Turtle and Ninja Turtles. And
well, I was watching the last Hunger Games movie, part two, last one, or whatever. I don't know, there were five of them, I guess, with my son last night. And, you know, a lot of the Hunger Games stuff makes a lot of sense. And I read the books, but I don't remember this part. Maybe it wasn't in the books. There's a part where they're getting attacked by like these zombie mutants underneath the city. Is that supposed to be from like the nuclear war that set up the whole city that way? I don't know. I can't remember. It didn't make sense compared to the rest of the movie. The rest of the movie makes pretty good sense.
Or biological experiments that just went wrong. Like,
yeah.
You know?
Anyway, back to Harvard also has the medical school in the Longwood area near Fenway. It's got all over the place, right? And so you're going to have people traveling a lot to get to Harvard. It's not just kids living in the freshmen living in the dorms in the yard that might have to not walk very far. Even some of them, if they're, you know, might have to. A lot more people are traveling than they let out, especially the workers. And that means you're actually literally risking your life to come into Harvard. And then if you have kids like I do, you have to stay home with the kids. So Harvard's making you eat up vacation time. Now, that sounds benign, right? What's vacation time here or there? Well, here's the problem. If you have kids, for example, they have a lot of vacations you have to cover, including summer. And if anyone with kids knows, in this wonderful land of ours, land of the home, free of the brave, you have enormous costs for childcare. Enormous costs. Now, you know, if we were a call-in show, which we're not really pressing, you could get someone calling, hey, I got my grandmother watching the kids, so everything's fine. I actually heard this on a radio show the other day. They were talking about healthcare, and a guy came in and started giving like a capitalist argument. It didn't sound like a capitalist, might have been, about the government should have any role in healthcare. So they were like, well, do you have healthcare? He goes, yes, I have healthcare. So, and this is a direct quote, I really don't care about other people. I just care about my family. Now, in a sane society, like a tribal society or something, someone like that would be immediately sent into exile as a sociopath. You just do not want that person around you or around your kids because they're sick in the head. Anyone that would sit there and say, condemn people to death, basically, is what he's doing.
And feel good about it, right? Yeah.
Means you're not human anymore. You just forfeited your humanity.
It's like, as long as it's not happening to me, I can care less, you know?
That's so evil. Yeah. That's so kind of like,
he's perfect in a fascist society.
I hate that so much. Yeah,
he's
I know. He's going to be a fascist, no doubt. Someday, if he's not already. Anyway, the original point is just basically that you have this really bad situation with this upcoming snow thing, where I'm already dreading it, because the last big snowfalls, one of them we got a snow day at Harvard, and very begrudgingly, at the very last minute, they did it because there was so much pressure on them. I put pressure on them. I'm nothing. I mean, my little pressure doesn't mean anything, but I'm just saying, I think a lot of people did what I did, and were just really, really angry. I was actually going around the workplace saying, we need a day off tomorrow. What is this stuff with snow days at Harvard now? Blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I wrote to them. I did all this stuff. Now, I'm not saying I did anything. I'm just saying that there must have been other people that did the same thing. And also, you had the governor, Charles Baker, Mr. Capitalist, was actually saying, oh, yeah, I think tomorrow everyone should stay home, or I can't do his voice well. And he had Walsh. So there's just this momentum built up that usually isn't there for one of those storms that we had earlier in the winter. And so Harvard begrudgingly at the last minute let some people stay home, and I was one of those people, you know. This time I'm afraid they're just going to roughshod the whole thing and say, screw you. And it's going to be like Tuesday and Wednesday. The snow's going to be really bad.
Really?
Yeah. And I need those vacation days for the summer so I don't have to pay a huge amount of money in summer camps or just hiring someone to watch the kids or sending them to some weird thing. You know, the stuff you have to do, this is the most anti-family country in the world, by the way. The only country in the world without guaranteed maternity leave other than Papua New Guinea, which is a very poor country, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, back to doing one more public service announcement here. And this is what got me started on the snow day. Storm season emergency preparedness public service announcement. And they have a picture of the blizzard of 78, which is a big deal here in Boston. It's storm season with power outages and weather-related emergencies more likely than the rest of the year. So be prepared ahead of time by having a couple gallons of drinking water. By the way, a couple gallons isn't enough, but whatever. And at least a few days worth of healthy, tasty, ready-to-eat food. Well, let's see. If it's healthy, it's fresh. And since you can't get the fresh food, this doesn't really work either. But anyway,
what's the thing they have in the military? Ready-to-eat meals?
You know, they used to call them K-rations a long time ago. Now they're MSRPs, militaries. I forget what they are. Let other people scramble to the supermarket and wait on long lines while you safely ride out the storm from the comfort of your home. That sounds a little selfish at the end there, too. A public service message from WFO and Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Go into your own bunker while you're at it.
Yeah, why don't you become a survivalist while you're at it? You know, I think about the survivalist stuff sometimes, and it's like on Walking Dead or those shows. This is one thing that's I kind of like about those shows. No matter what you do, or a good example is that book which was turned into a movie by
Snowpiercer.
No. That's a good one. That's a great one. No, but it's another one. Who's the guy that wrote No Country for Old Men? Cormac McCarthy, and he wrote a book about the United States after a nuclear war and to attempts at survival in a very diminished environment. What was that called? I can't remember. I really like that
Day
book.
Day After Tomorrow?
No. I really like that book. Anyway, look up Cormac McCarthy. You'll see it was written about within the last 10 years. And the thing is, in that book and in lots of other that dystopian stuff, which I like a lot, I like to read that stuff, no matter what kind of bunker you got set up, the hordes of people or the hordes of mutated people or the zombies or whatever, they are looking around, man. They're not just sitting in the cities like waiting to starve. They're out in the countryside.
I Am Legend or something.
Yeah, exactly. You know? They're looking around and they're going to find your little, unless you conceal it very well, and which would cost a ton of money. And unless you're like not seen, right? I mean, word might get around that Joe Schmo has a bunker buried in the side of a hill, you know? That's where we're going to go if things go bad. You know what I mean? You got to be secretive. You got to have money. You got to hide the thing. And then you got to keep a low profile after the event that's destroyed humanity. And then you got to keep your sanity. I mean, all these things, you know, nah, I'm sorry. It's not going to work. You're going to have to work with other people, just like in regular society. You know, we're living in, and the reality is, folks, you're not on your own, whether you like it or not. You're not an individual. You're not a Thomas individual. Somebody taught you how to talk. Somebody taught you how to dress yourself. Somebody taught you how to eat. You know, the people that go off and isolate themselves tend to die pretty quick, you know, and they're not as isolated as they think oftentimes. So, yes, you're in a society. Margaret Thatcher was wrong. Remember Thatcher? She said, there is no such thing as society. They're only individuals. What a piece of work she was, right? And then at the end of her life, guess what happens? She goes senile for a number of years, and there's people taking care of her 24/7 because she's rich. So how's that? How are you on your own, Maggie? You would have been out wandering the streets and would have been stomped to death, and rightly so, because of all the evil you did. Remember they used to call her Thatcher the Milk Snatcher?
Yeah.
Because she would just, first thing she did when she got in power, she took away children's food and food at schools and stuff. Anyway, Maggie Thatcher living off the collective largesse and collective labor of the working class throughout her entire life.
In Britain.
And saying there's no society. Anyway, back to a possible general strike on May Day. Here's what we were talking about earlier in the show. This is from, again, Socialist Alternative. You can find this on socialistalternative.org. It's also in our newspaper here, Socialist Alternative. Union locals passed resolution supporting a May 1 nationwide strike call by Stephen Kimmerill. I'll read a little bit of this. The time is ripe for an escalation of the resistance against Trump and his attacks on immigrants, women's, and workers' rights. A few union locals have waded into the debate by passing resolutions for action on May 1st. This is what we were talking about earlier. The board of directors of the Minnesota Nurses Association, quote, calls upon the NNU, that's the National Nurses Union, the AFL-CIO, and the AFL-CIO to start an intense discussion about protest action on May Day, May 1st, 2017, including a discussion within the AFL-CIO about a call for a nationwide strike that day. Now, again, if you know the history of May 1st, even in the United States, if you go back far enough, there are histories of big strike action being called that day, big protests. Even more recently, 2006, the Day Without an Immigrant, big protest strikes. And May 1st is a holiday that goes back to 1886, a struggle for an eight-hour day, and the Haymarket Martyrs, and the fight for an eight-hour day in the United States. And then it became an international holiday of the socialist movement, of the communist movement, of the working class, International Workers' Day. And in many countries, there are general strikes on May Day and big demonstrations, even up till recent times, even up till now. But in the United States, recent decades, May 1st has been kept alive mostly by immigrant groups, some unions that try to organize immigrants, and some left groups kind of keeping it alive. I was surprised, like, for example, 2 years ago in Worcester, Mass., where I've been doing some organizing lately, for Socialist Alternative, that there is the official labor movement actually had something on May 1st. I don't know what hook they used. I don't remember maybe they just called it International Workers Day. I don't know. But it was, when we got there, we realized it was conservative unions were doing it, which is good in a way. But I don't think they really understood the whole thing. But some of the unions did, and the people there were great. And we actually did really well at that demo.
Well, it's like that
in terms
guy
of interest and so on.
Remember 2014 November when we ran into in West Roxbury, Baker Faker was.
Oh, yeah, Charlie, the guy we were talking about a minute ago, Charles Baker.
Yeah, but there was that guy there that was like, supporting him. I agree with you.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, he's supporting him, so it's like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's
you agree with the sign.
That's the nature of being a socialist right now in America. If I think I would call, you know, there's a lot of people calling themselves socialists right now, and the word socialism is getting more popular, and that's good in a way. But the definition of socialism is all over the map. So you have people calling themselves socialists that support the Democratic Party, and even people that call themselves socialists that support capitalism. And if you really get into it with them, or aspects of capitalism, so you have to get into it. I think you have to have a baseline definition of what is really a socialist. Socialist is someone that's anti-capitalist, number one, and secondly, does not support capitalist political parties. That's pretty simple. That makes sense. In a lot of countries, that's pretty obvious. Here, because we don't have a mass left party, like a big socialist party or big labor party, that's not so obvious. You have people that consider the Democrats somehow left. The corporate media somehow talks about that from time to time. And it gets very confused in people's minds. And I don't blame them necessarily. I'm just saying that, I'm sorry, you're not a socialist if you support the Democratic Party, which is a capitalist political party. It's not a social democratic party. Like, if someone supports the Labour Party in Britain, even though it's gone to the right heavily, like under Blair and so on, Tony Blair, I would still say they could be a socialist, obviously, because that party's history is a social democratic party. The history of social democratic parties is they started out as socialist parties. They were revolutionary socialist parties when they began. Now, a lot of them in Europe are so, like right now in France, you've got Hollande, right? The head of the Socialist Party in France, an old social democratic party that has been carrying out capitalist policies.
Why has France been attacked? Because what they've been involved with was striking.
Well, they have a left wing, and I would call those left wingers as part of the party, I would call them socialists because of the history of the party. And there's much more of a ability to transform a party like that. It's hard. But you could transform a party like an old social democratic party because they still tend to have memberships, you know? Like, you can't join the Democratic Party. You can register as a Democrat to vote Democrat, and whether you do or not is up to you. But you're not joining the Democratic Party. It's not a membership-based party. Democratic Party has no union affiliations. Social democratic parties in Europe still have memberships, a lot of them, perhaps all of them. I'd have to double-check that. They have union affiliations, formal union affiliations, where the unions get a vote and so on. And there are ways then to get involved in that party that do not exist in the United States. The Democratic Party in the United States, you can maybe run as a candidate. That gets you involved temporarily. Whether you get support or not is a different thing. For example, I'll give you a good example. Bernie Sanders, right? Bernie Sanders, people don't realize, he's not a socialist anymore. I think he was for a while back in the late 70s, early 80s. But at some point in the around 1992, and maybe a little bit before, he basically did a deal. Well, this is from 92, this deal, but he did a deal with the Democratic Party. He said, you don't run, because he lost an election for governor, and he got beat by a Democrat. But he still had a base in Vermont based on the years when he was trying to build an independent political party there. So he was getting, obviously, ambitious. He came to Harvard and did this horrible thing at the Kennedy School, which is this think tank for the Democratic Party and the liberals. And did a deal with the Democratic Party, said, you don't run against me in Vermont, and I will support your national candidates. And he did after that. He's always supported all of them. You know, Clinton's, Obama, you name it, he supported them. And the Democratic Party stuck to its end of the deal and hasn't run anyone in Vermont. But this didn't prevent, because of the nature of some of the electoral laws in this country, didn't prevent one time Sanders was running for another person to say, as a Democrat, especially since Sanders was running still as an independent, quote-unquote, wasn't really independent, but a woman who was really actually to the left of Sanders on a number of issues, in terms of issues about U.S. imperialism and racism and stuff. And she, I think she was black, and she ran for office, and this is in the 90s, against Sanders, and she registered as a Democrat. Now, that's a big mistake, in my opinion. It means she's not a socialist. But whatever, she decides to run as a Democrat. And this should be a way, this is one of the few ways that you can actually get involved in the Democratic Party in terms of really being involved. You're not a member but you're in the structures when you run for office. However, there's a big qualifier on that. Democratic Party decides which candidates they're going to really support or not. So you could have, like in Boston, unfortunately, a whole row of Democratic Party candidates. Maybe only one is getting any real help from the party, or two. The rest are, you know, following the lead, which is horrible. And if they get a certain number of votes, all of a sudden they'll be embraced by the party and all the money will come in from the businesses and stuff. But usually they'll choose, right? Democratic Party. So even if you say, I will get involved in the Democratic Party by running for office as a Democrat, there's no guarantee you'll actually be able to get involved in the party. This is my point. So this woman did not get anointed by the party. They wanted to keep the deal with Sanders. So whenever she would get up to speak at a rally or something, they wouldn't let her. They said, no, there's no room on the platform. You only Bernie. You know, this isn't Vermont. So this is the whole thing, you know. Democratic Party, no membership base, no formal affiliations to unions, no formal affiliations really to community groups either. There's no way to there's no way to reform it. And there's still people running around saying, I'm a socialist, I'm going to reform the Democratic Party. It's completely crazy. It's been tried a million times. It doesn't work because there's no there. There's just the big money people in the back room that control it, along with people that ran for office that are in with the big money people. Doesn't mean everyone that ran for office or got office is in there. And that's who runs the party, you know? And a lot of people don't understand that. They don't know that. But here, you got to have some sort of baseline for being a socialist, you know. And anyway, let's get back to the strike thing. Teachers Union in Seattle, this is in addition to the Minneapolis, Minnesota Association, the Teachers Union in Seattle, the Seattle Education Association, took it a step further, is now calling on the statewide Washington Education Association and on the 3 million strong National Education Association nationwide to, quote, call upon their affiliates to go on a one-day strike on May 1st, 2017. Should other labor unions put out the call for a strike that day? How does that phraseology work? To call upon your affiliates, should other labor unions put out a call for a strike that day? I guess that means they don't want to go it alone. If you can move a motion in your trade union or any other activist union, we publish below a resolution that we passed used as a model. This is referring to socialistalternative.org, this article, or here in this newspaper here. And anyway, so these two things were passed by big union bodies. And here's the language for one of them. Seattle Education Association Representative Assembly, February 13th. Accepted unanimously. Oh, unanimously, that's good. At the Representatives Assembly of the Seattle Educators Association, SEA, February 13th, 2013. And by the way, you're wondering why this particular union? Well, it's got a lot to do with Shama, right? Shama Sawant, who was a member of this union, is now an elected socialist, two-time elected socialist city councilor in Seattle, member of Socialist Alternative, running as an open socialist, running openly as a member of Socialist Alternative, and they won a strike recently, you know? So Seattle, you know, through Socialist Alternative is quite big in Seattle as well, and it's a fairly progressive city, plus actually open socialist, pushing things to the left. This doesn't come out of nowhere. So anyway, here's the resolution. Whereas national right to work legislation has been proposed in the U.S. Congress, threatening our union's very existence. And whereas the Washington State Senate proposed an education budget that trades our union rights for a subpar increase in funding, not nearly meeting the demands set forth by the McCleary decision. And whereas unions have been at the forefront of defending workers against corporate erosion of wages and benefits, and a weakening of labor's ability to stand up for workers' rights comes with a concomitant loss of the community's rights as well. Therefore, be it resolved that the SEA, Seattle Education Association, will propose in writing to the WEA and the NEA that they call upon their affiliates to go on a one-day strike in order to strengthen our ability to take a stand for both worker rights and the paramount needs of our students on May Day, May 1st, 2017, should other AFL-CIO labor unions put out a call for a strike on that day or another deemed more appropriate by the labor movement. Therefore, be it resolved, further resolved that the SEA asked the WEA and the NEA to notify all their affiliates in writing of this conditional call, and when the time comes, prominently display the call on its websites. So what they're saying, basically, a little bit of a qualifier there, they're saying if other unions get involved, they don't want to go it alone. But still, that's a big step forward. One other thing we want to talk about in the paper here, maybe a couple other things, but and we did mention this on another show. I don't know if you heard this or not, but we're running another candidate. Social Alternative is running another candidate.
Oh, no,
yep. This time in Minneapolis. And the candidate's name is Ginger Jensen. That's J-E-N-T-Z-E-N, Ginger. And she's a member of Social Alternative and is a leading activist in Minneapolis 15 now. That's $50 minimum wage now. And member of Social Alternative. She's running for Minneapolis City Council in Ward 3. Her website is gingerjensen.org. Now, what happened in Minneapolis recently is some of our listeners have probably heard about the $15, what's it called? I'm spacing on the exact name. $15 minimum wage campaign that's mainly funded by SEIU, that's had some one-day general strikes here or there. One-day strikes in workplaces here or there, not general strikes, sorry. What's that called? Fight for 15. So that some of our listeners might have heard of that, might have witnessed that if you live in a big city. Fight for 15. And this has been, somewhat successful in getting the word out. There have been a number of cities, starting with Seattle, which was, led by Shama Swan and Social Alternative, got a $15 an hour minimum wage law passed back in 2013 or 14. And this was the start. This was the first city in the country. Then other cities did the same thing. Richmond, California, I think L.A., San Francisco, and there's been a few others. Since the election, I haven't heard that much about 15. During the election, it even died down because, even Sanders came late to the $15 an hour minimum wage thing. But he did talk about, during his campaign, getting a higher minimum wage. That was a constant thing. Clinton claimed to all of a sudden to be for 15 and then just dropped it, didn't talk about it, especially after Sanders turned over the whole thing to her. So basically, it might have died down a little, but I think some of our listeners may remember Fight for 15, and there's even been recent demos around in November and so on, around Black Friday and all that. Now, there's another $15 minimum wage thing that came out of the Seattle one that we led, the Social Alternative led, called 15 Now. $15 an hour minimum wage now. And these are not competing at all. These are helping each other. These are the same fight, basically. But just based on the terrain in different cities where, a campaign got going or didn't get going, it's either 15 now or 515. 515 is much bigger in more cities and so on. It's got money from SEIU behind it. The SEIU is a union, by the way. So Minneapolis was one of the places where 15 now took root. And we focused it around the airport workers and then beyond, and it became very popular. Polling data was brilliant. It was like 60%, 70% in favor of $15 minimum wage. This is just in November. This is, leading up to the election. It was on the ballot. It was on the ballot to be a referendum that we were going to win. And guess what happened in Minneapolis? You can probably guess.
They snatched it.
Who's they, though?
The Democrats.
The Democrats and the Republicans together. You want bipartisanship? All the corporate media is like, we want bipartisanship. Well, doesn't content matter? Not that the Democrats and Republicans are, they're different, but they got a lot of similarities. And one of them is they represent big business at the end of the day. And that's their big similarity. And they also represent imperialism at the end of the day. That's their other big similarity. So there's a lot of differences, but a lot of similarities too, and fundamental ones. So yes, in Minneapolis, you only had two. The whole thing is dominated by Democrats, the whole city council. Only two of them, really one, came out in favor of this $15 an hour minimum wage referendum. The rest were against it. They tried to stop it. They lost. It still got on the ballot. But then they got Republican judges that are supposed to be against. They got Republican judges to rule against it. And it was taken and yanked off the ballot at the last minute. Now, we're still fighting to put it on the ballot, but we're also fighting to get Ginger Jensen elected as part of that struggle and other struggles that are needed. I'm just going to look at this for a minute here. It's an interview with Ginger. Why are you running for this campaign? She said, I worked for years as a tipped restaurant worker and a home health care worker, and I joined Social Alternative in 2012. I fought against foreclosures with Occupy Homes Minneapolis and against police violence with hashtag Black Lives Matter Minneapolis. I spent 2 years fighting to win $15 an hour minimum wage in Minneapolis for a proposal supported by 68% of Minneapolis residents and confirmed viable by the city of Minneapolis's own study. We need political representatives who will fight unambiguously for working people and oppressed communities. We need political leaders who refuse corporate donations, who have proven themselves as uncompromising fighters, and who come out of our own movements. Now, one of the things that any candidate from Socialist Alternative or any candidate around the world in the Committee for Workers International, which Social Alternative is in political solidarity with, when they run for office, they run at the wage, the average wage of the working people in their area that they represent. They don't take the inflated salaries, these politicians. In Seattle, guess how much a Seattle city councilor is supposed to make?
120?
There you go. 120,000 big ones. What does Shama make?
50,000?
40.
40?
40-something, yeah. Because she only takes the average wage of the people in her district. And that is the difference between a corporate politician from the Democratic or Republican parties and a socialist politician. The average wage of the workers, that's what we take when we run for office. Main goals of the campaign: we need to change the priorities in Minneapolis City Hall. Minneapolis residents paid $825 million for the construction of U.S. Bank football stadium and refurbishing the Target Center arena for a billionaire. And a bank invested in the Dakota Access Pipeline. Imagine if we had used that money to fix the broken for-profit housing system that's pricing working-class residents and students out of Minneapolis. Now, I'm in Minneapolis. Remember we were talking about Chicago? Minneapolis is huge. I mean, just geographically, it is huge. You could have probably triple the number of houses there that you do now without even being too crowded. Minneapolis, it's like I stayed in a hotel there for a conference one time.
Boston,
it's huge. Oh, huge, huge, huge. I stayed in a hotel there for one time for a conference. And I'm like, hey, I forgot to bring my toothpaste. I got to go buy some toothpaste, you know? Where's the drugstore? It was 2 miles away. It's not on the corner. And it's just like a place with stores and stuff. But it's not on the corner. It's 2 miles away. Now, because the place is just geographically huge, people are used to these distances, and most people are driving around in cars and stuff. I had to jump on a bus that I didn't know.
It's like Houston.
Yeah,
it's geographically
exactly.
stretched out. And
they actually have light rail in Minneapolis, but it's very limited. And just as a little digression, by the way, Seattle, again, I think this is related to Shama and Social Alternative indirectly. There's a big push for more mass transit, and it's got some teeth to it. So in Seattle, I actually saw them when I went out to help. I went out for a week to help campaign for Shama in her reelection bid, which was successful. I saw them actually building the last stages of more light rail. How many cities? I mean, they can't even extend the Green Line in Boston. It's insane. And I knew that was going to happen. They can't even get a north. You know how
they froze. They were doing it, but then it just
Charles
stopped.
Baker and the Democrats working hand in hand. You want more bipartisanship? Come to Massachusetts. See the governor, Republican governor, and the Democratic Party hacks all together on charter schools. They love charter schools, and they hate mass transit, and they all suck. The Democrats and Republicans suck, suck, suck. That includes Pat Jalen here in Somerville. Ooh, Pat Jalen, progressive. No, you're in the Democratic Party. You suck. They suck. They are horrible. And they have stopped mass transit from expanding in this city. It's unbelievable. I've been here long enough. There's this thing called the North-South Rail Link. They've been talking about it for 40 years, man. 40 years. All it is you build a little tunnel between North Station and South Station so trains coming into Boston can just go whoosh, right through, stop there, but then go on without this weird change that they can't even do to go to hook up rail lines north and south, called the North-South Rail Link. Unions have been for it. It just makes sense. They won't even do that. Then they're going to expand the Green Line. Oh, they cut it back. They had a plan. They cut the plan back. They cut it back again. They're, you know, who knows?
Until that casino comes in, then we'll build that real quick.
Well, they built that subway station, which I've heard bad things about. I haven't even been in it, at Assembly Square. You been in that one?
No.
Orange Line? Yeah. They've got like a lot of stores and shishi restaurants now around Assembly Square. It's not like the old days.
There's a train station that goes to that
Orange
particular
Line, Assembly Square. I believe so, yeah. I believe so. I think it's the Orange Line. I'm not sure.
Because I remember you got off back in the day.
In the day, you had to drive, man.
No, back in the day, you get off at Sullivan, you have to walk to the Home Depot.
Can you really walk? It's a far walk, isn't it?
It is, but it's underneath that underpass, that highway system.
Yeah.
That's how it was back then.
I don't know if
you
I ever did that.
You got off at Sullivan. You're right up.
I don't know if I ever did that walk. I always thought it was too far. But yeah, you're right. So anyway, that's the only subway system stop I can think of. They refurbished Government Center. Whoopee. You know, I was there. It looks
which
the same.
Their window broke. Remember that window glass just fell. And
well, you know, that's another thing. Like the minute they do anything now, they basically do corporate welfare. Hey, businesses, come in. Private businesses, come in and build stuff the city itself should be building. It's the stupidest thing. And you know what Baker's latest thing is? I'm on this mail list for the META workers, right? Baker has privatized aspects, and Baker and the Democrats, let's be clear, have privatized aspects of the subway system, of the META. And the only thing wrong with the META is it doesn't have enough revenue. You know, and who knows, maybe it does have enough, but the way they're spending it. But anyway, because they don't want to raise taxes and then dedicate the taxes to the META. They did a thing, we've talked about this on the show before, they did a thing back in the early 2000s where they de-linked the META budget from the state budget and said, in perpetuity, from now on, you're basically going to have to rely on a tiny portion of tax revenue that comes, I believe, from sales tax to fund the MBTA. Before that, if the MBTA needed more money, they would just allocate it, you know, based on political fights and so on. But you could, but they had the option to just allocate chunks of money to add to the subway system back, you know. And then they just stopped it dead cold and said, no, you're not doing that anymore. Now it's got to come from that. Now you have a set budget based on this little pennies from a sales tax, not even the whole thing. And you know, they're just fighting any kind of raising taxes for the MBTA or freeing up budget for the MBTA. So there's been a downward slide in quality and all that, to the point where, you know, when that two winters ago when everything was getting stuck?
Yeah.
That's because they didn't have the number of people working anymore. It's that simple. Because if you think about it, there have been worse.
Rails that couldn't been go
worse,
for months.
Yeah, there have been worse. Well, the commuter rails are also run by private companies, you know?
Yeah.
So there's been worse snowstorms in Boston. That wasn't even that bad a winter. It was bad, but it wasn't. There has been many worse ones. And all of a sudden, everything is clogged up with snow. Why is that? Oh, because you're not hiring enough people to go out and plow the tracks anymore. Duh. And you're probably privatized it, too. And maybe they're getting more money from somewhere else. They don't bother with the T, you know? Anyway, you get the point. Mass transit in a little bit in Minneapolis. None here. A lot in Seattle. Follow the socialist trail. You'll have more mass transit. Let's see. So I'm not going to read the whole article. It's a good interview.
I heard Japan got a good system.
Well,
very reliable.
Well, you're getting into a whole thing now. You got to talk about other countries.
The bullet trains.
Speed rail. It's gone way beyond what people realize. See, yeah, I understand what you're saying, right? We have in our mind Japan. But that's gone way beyond that in some countries. China has this huge, like, you know, really fast rail. What do they call it? There's a name for it.
I'm screwing up. The one that goes to Tibet.
I don't know. There's more than one, I think. That's what I'm trying to say. It's like it's more extensive and faster than we realize. It's not just a bullet train anymore. It's like these maglev trains that run on magnetic
like
fields.
France. Like France, yeah.
And they're really super fast. Here in the U.S., because I'm on this Facebook page with all this like Amtrak stuff, right? And here in the U.S., they're talking about building high-speed rail, quote-unquote, and it's going to turn out to be still 2 hours from, like, Boston to New York. Now it's, like, 4, which is absurd. You know, and with these really fast rails that they have now, it should be, like, half an hour, you know? So, anyway.
Really? From Boston to New York, half an hour?
If you can go 250 miles an hour, well, it's not that far, Boston to New York, is it? What is it?
But there's so much in between, like you
not
have
if you
to
build
do that,
it. Not if you build it
away from how whatever.
If you build it and you have an express line, no, they've got these old tracks. They could just reinvigorate. They still have these old tracks. Anyway, getting back to Ginger Jensen, check more out about Ginger Jensen. Go to socialistalternative.org. How can people support your campaign? We will. Let's see. I just want to see what if there's other stuff I really want to read in here. There is. I mean, I want to read all of it, but I don't have time. Oh, here we go. I'd only take the average wage of a worker in the war, donating half my $80,000 salary to social movements. $80,000 for the that's less than Boston, actually, for the Minneapolis city councilor. She would donate half of it through taking only the average wage of a worker. She goes, now more than ever, we need to get organized to defend our communities. That's why I'm a member of Socialist Alternative. In Minneapolis and nationally, we are building a strong socialist backbone within the wider mass movements erupting against Trump and the billionaire class. So, this is a really good article, and I urge you to read it. Seattle divests from Wells Fargo over Dapple. That was a big victory in Seattle, but, you know, they very quickly got that pipeline. I don't know if you read about it. They smashed the... After that happened, they out in North Dakota, they smashed the encampment. I'm not sure where that's at right now, but it's definitely a setback. Big center page thing on International Women's Day, including where this started from in Russia. And then we have other articles. Socialists gathered in Brazil for CWI's 9th Latin American School. Spain, Pablo Iglesias wins clear victory in Podemos. That was one of the new left formations in Spain recently. Well, let's get back to why we should strike on May Day, and then we'll move on. Shama's speech here, which has been, I've seen in other formats. This was originally in Jacobin Magazine, 2/21/17. And this is before the before the International Women's Day. May Day actions, quote, have more potential to change the parameters of U.S. politics than decades of insider lobbying. Talk of strike actions already bubbling up within the labor movement, and we talked about that. Where there is no formal strike, rank-and-file union members and left labor leaders should rapidly move to bring resolutions and make the case within their own unions for May 1st strike action. Where there is no formal strike or any union, other forms of workplace action can include using individual sick days or vacation days, organizing for a lunchtime meeting with your coworkers, or possibly leaving a week early to join protests, as happened in the women's strike in Poland last October. We want the largest possible show of force on May 1st, while keeping in mind that such actions would be too risky for some workers to take part in. So that's also what I was referring to earlier, that we're kind of pushing the envelope or stretching the boundaries of what a general strike means. We're saying, okay, look, even if you're not in a union, in the United States, unfortunately, there's all too many people not in unions. Even if there's no left political party to provide cover and organization, no mass left party, that you know, we still hope people will find a way to show their anger at Trump's, you know, anti-woman, anti-worker, anti-immigrant policies on May 1st. And that was just mentioned a few ways you could do that. International Women's Day. I don't know. I know there was a couple of things in Boston that happened. I didn't get a report on them. I know that Socialist Alternative was initiating movements around the protests and stuff around the country or participating in them. What I was involved in out in Worcester was there was no other groups doing anything on the street. The Democratic Party, I think, had some sort of insider thing with a couple days before International Women's Day with the Attorney General, of all people, in Massachusetts, part of that, but I didn't hear about it. No one heard about it very much. We heard about it afterwards. So in Worcester, Social Alternative initiated the only anti-women's, the only anti-Trump pro-International Women's Day rally. By the way, International Women's Day used to be called International Working Women's Day until the UN got rid of the working part because of its socialist roots. And so anyway, we did this. It was a modest success. We had about, at the height of it, about 50 people. People were coming and going. It was after work, 5 p.m. But we were pleased with it because a couple of the schools were on vacation where we have a base. And, you know, we did it for kind of a bit last minute, unfortunately. I mean, we did do about a week of leafleting for it and stuff and Facebook. But it was very good because otherwise, nothing would have happened. And on January 21st, the big International Women's Day thing around the country, nothing happened in Worcester. That was pretty sad. Worcester's the second biggest city in New England. Anyway, again, from Shama, we put out a leaflet we were passing out at the rally and to people that walked by from Socialist Alternative. It's a national leaflet. We just added our Worcester Socialist Alternative stuff to. But a part of this is, again, like the article I was just reading, millions have marched and tens of thousands have shut down airports. This is from Shama, but Trump is not backing down. The time is right for an escalation of resistance against Trump and his attacks on immigrants, women's, and workers' rights. Next possible date to prepare massive collective resistance is May Day, known and celebrated around the world as International Workers' Day. For more than 100 years, this day is celebrated to remind the world of the Haymarket martyrs who are fighting for an eight-hour day and to defend workers' and unions' rights. Since May Day 2006, when strike action for immigrant rights succeeded in pushing back attacks from Republicans, from the Republican administration, this day has been also linked to the struggle against racism and for immigrant rights. The idea of strikes across the country on May Day is spreading. Teachers, nurses, and public sector unions across the country are calling for work stoppages. We need to build upon this with workplace and union discussions about strike actions, mobilization in our campuses and communities, and preparation to defend anyone faced with victimization for protesting on May Day. If masses of working people withhold their labor, it will hit the billionaire class where it hurts, their profits. This is the language that they understand. A one-day strike all across the U.S. will not solve all the problems we have with Trump and the billionaire class, but it will show the power of working people, not the least to the working class ourselves. And there's other stuff on here about International Workers' Day and so on. Criticism of the Democratic Party, some demands, defend and extend immigrant rights, no ban, no wall, no ICE raids, and no deportations, full civil rights and legalization for all immigrants. Have you heard of any ICE raids in Boston, Diego, or Cambridge?
Well, mostly Houston, I've heard from, like, family members calling in saying, you believe this? This took my neighbor and half the whole block. And then, this happened a lot in Texas.
And then what? And then we're keeping our head down, or we're fighting it, or what? What do they say after that? Anything?
Oh, a lot of them can't. They're trying to leave. They're just like, you know.
Trying to leave. Yeah. I've heard that. Yeah.
Or go to another state.
Yeah.
Like Louisiana, which is less. It's happening less.
By the way, we don't have time to really get into this too much, but you know how I talk about, we've talked about. If you have a big workers' party, and you've experienced this in, you've been to Cuba, you've been to El Salvador. Cuba's different, obviously, but if you have a big workers' party, meaning socialist party, communist party, labor party, Podemos in Spain, whatever you want to call it.
There's only one party.
I know. That's why it's different, obviously. But it's
there's no choice.
But I talk about what I talk about, even countries where the social democratic parties have moved to the right and supported capitalism. The existence, the historical existence of parties like that, or the current existence of parties like that, parties that are not getting all their money from big business or none of it, and they're still seen as socialist or communist or radical of some sort. We have to remember that right up in Canada, our neighbors to the north have had this thing called the New Democratic Party since 1964. They came into being based on fighting for national health care, which they won. So. An interesting article in this magazine called Jacobin, called The Common Sense of Socialism. Again, don't have time to get into it too much, but just want to say quickly, it backs up all that stuff I've been saying. I mean, there's other examples too, of course. I'm not the only one saying that stuff, but I'm trying to make this point that if you live in a country with a party to the left of the Democrats and Republicans, a true socialist party or social democratic party or something to the left of the Democrats and Republicans, you will have much more of a safety net, much more of a, you know, of social welfare. You'll have much bigger, much more left politics.
You will get penalized $600
even under capitalism. Yeah, even under you'll probably have national health care. Even under capitalism,
They really tried, these guys. Yeah. They're like, let me try an exempt here. You're making, and I was below that, they call it the threshold. Still, they're not letting me do it. The computer's not. Don't get mad at me. I'm doing my best. I'm not mad at you. Thank you for doing, because this is CEOC that does it for free. So I'm not complaining. Doing my taxes. I'm trying to get the exemption. Just they won't let me. You're gonna have to. Do you want to put in for appeals?
Because you made too much money.
Yes, I want to put in.
Is that
for
what
appeals,
we're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you made very little money though. But actually, in reality, you made very little money. That's how low the standard is.
Well, put it
it's
this
ridiculous.
Way. If it's on this federal, I was 520 minus 600. So that's about 1,120. So the feds are keeping 600 out of it.
Yep.
Automatically. Yep. That's like, thank you.
Yep. So this article.
Why don't you provide me with health care now with that $600
exactly,
you took from me?
Exactly. Well, that's one of the problems that people don't want. The liberals don't want to talk about with Obamacare. It penalized working people that could not afford health care. And despite the subsidies and all that, you'd end up with a rotten healthcare plan, or if you didn't want one and you didn't get one for a variety of reasons, then they take like you did you they and penalize
they,
you in the tax
they
payment.
Talk about it. We're gonna see how we can get you here for the markets. The markets. What is this whole thing with the markets? Yep. There shouldn't even be a market involved in this.
It's
whole
a human
thing.
Right. There shouldn't be any profit involved in
everything's
with sick
markets
people.
Now. Let me see if what's offered here in the markets. What am I, like an insurance?
You're shopping for tomatoes, man. Except for it's a life or death tomato. Anyway, The Common Sense of Socialism, Jacobin. What can the Canadian experience teach us about building a mass working class party in the U.S.? Now, as we're just talking about, in Canada they have a national health care system that, you know how now they're talking about, this is very interesting, they're talking about how right now there's people that didn't really care that much about Obamacare, but now they're defending it. They're defending it at these town halls where the Republicans come back and the Democrats come back to their, when they're on vacation, which they often are, back to their communities. And you have like this interesting effect of some Republicans being attacked by not just Democrats or people to the left of Democrats, but also by Republicans who want to keep this. They don't want to do the thing that Trump is doing with the health care, because there are a couple things in Obamacare, the extension of Medicare in some states, and the extension of children to 26, which they're not getting rid of in the Trump version, supposedly. But in other words, the people that got extra health care don't want to lose it. Now, this is a corollary to, and I'm not saying that to apologize for all the problems with Obamacare. We didn't have to have Obamacare. We could have single payer. We still need it. and a lot of people talk about that too. But what is the correlation I'm making here is that in Canada, once they got national health care in 1964, consistently since then, almost no one wants to get rid of it, except the real powerful people that control the big corporations and the government. They whittle away at it. They starve it. They want to get rid of it and make more profit. But the average, like even the average conservative that supports people like that, they don't want to get rid of it. It's very popular.
They're doing like what Thatcher was doing in the 80s in England.
Well, that's happening right now. But there was just last week, there was a huge demonstration in London, maybe one of the biggest ever, to preserve the National Health Service because it's getting attacked in the same way. The conservative government in Britain is afraid to go on an all-out attack on NHS, on the NHS, but they snipe at it, and they have been for years. They've created a private system to parallel it and stuff like that. But what I'm trying to say is like what Michael Moore said in Sicko and what his movie Sicko and what is clear in this article and so on, that, wow, once you had national health care, no one wants to go back. You know, and that would be the case in this country. Once we got it, like the liberals, like Clinton and so on, no, it's impossible. It's too big a step. Obama, it's too big a step, too big a step. If they had really just been part of a movement, I don't want them to lead anything, the Democrats, but they'd just been part of a movement, went along with a movement really for single payer, and it was achieved, you would see it become extremely popular among all sections of the population, even people that voted for Trump. Anyway, this article talks about the need, basically what we've talked about here. Let's see. The NDP was founded in 1961 in an alliance with the Canadian Labour Congress. Now they say a left party in the U.S. would almost certainly not have a formal labor link. I don't think that's true. I think there were some unions would support it. Anyway, it's a really good article, and just gets into some of the stuff we've talked about on the show. That hey, a lot of things flow from having a political party that's not a corporate political party like the Republicans and the Democrats. Or, of course, the libertarians and so on. And one of the things that flow from that is better social welfare, including national health care and all that. It's no accident that all the countries with national health care around the world are countries that have the social democratic party or socialist or communist or labor parties, meaning workers' parties of some sort. So we're pretty much out of time. Got 3 minutes. Throw some music on and give our last words to the audience. Thanks for listening in this cold day. Perhaps we had a bigger audience. what's your last words, Diego? You're getting chewed up by capitalism. What is
keep up the struggle, and like I'm gonna do is keep your head up and power to the people. Don't believe the hype.
Yeah, and we're gonna go out with Gil Scott Heron here. I don't know what my last words are. I always try to think of some profound last words. I would say, not just something very practical in a way. This is a good time to become a socialist. A lot of polling data and so on show increased interest in socialism. Socialist groups are growing, including Socialist Alternative. And we really just would like you to, if you haven't yet, like that comrade we read his statement from, Bill Trombley, a 70-year-old in Cincinnati, Ohio. If he can check out socialism, so can you. And we urge you to do so. So that'll be it for today. I'm trying to get some music on here. It's not working. Oh, well, I decided to go old school with a CD. Anyways, you've been listening to Socialist Alternative Radio. Talking music from a working-class democratic socialist perspective. Join us in 2 weeks, and bye for now.
Be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials, because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The
revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nubs. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner, because the revolution will not be televised, brother.